You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. This story has a couple of sides to it, and I would like to mention a little bit of background on my twin sister, and then talk about the paranormal activity going on in this house my mom moved into about 9 years ago. Since the two of us were really young, for some reason my sister always had an interesting connection to the earth. We are half Native American, Apache, it says Chiricahua, so my great aunt has said that that may be part of it. Ever since elementary school, my sister, and we'll just call her Isabel, has done strange things like just spacing out and pointing and or commenting at something that I can't even see, or even jumping like she's scared of something that nobody else can see is there. She used to tell me about all the things she saw, but as we've gotten older, she's gotten to stop behaving that way and rarely talks about it anymore. But I recently saw about 6 months ago, her and both of our dogs staring at the corner of a room by the door. And then the door literally shut itself and opened again, which sent the dogs into a barking frenzy. And my sister and I joked about there being a ghost in our mom's house. But back to the first topic, for the longest time, my sister's always mentioned there being some kind of a dark shadow-like figure that appears somewhere every day. It's apparently not really a person. It kind of looks like something similar, but I think of No Face from Spirited Away when she talks about it, except the mask, and it has short legs. It changes its spot every time she sees it. It first being somewhere near the canal on our way to school, then outside one of her classrooms, and then on our bus stop, and she started getting uneasy, though, when it started getting near our home. Around that time, she started experiencing sleep paralysis almost every night, and when she wouldn't see the figure, but she just couldn't move. But one night she said that she knew she was in sleep paralysis, but she was still able to move. She turned around in her head, and directly next to her was the black shadowy figure. This time it had faint eyes, was in the bed with her, staring at her. She said it just turned around and went back to sleep because she was too tired to really put any effort into being afraid of it. So around that time, she would also wake up in the mornings with scratchings on her arms and back in places she can't physically reach herself because she's not that flexible. She doesn't have very long nails because the two of us are wrestlers and you're supposed to keep your nails short so you don't scratch people in the match. We don't own a cat or a dog, and in our dad's house either. And this kind of reminds me of this ghost story called, it says they don't own a cat or dog, but I thought she just talked about the dogs staring at a place on the wall as well as a sister. I don't understand that either, but anyway, I'll continue. This kind of reminds me of the ghost story called something like Mary or something. It's about something you don't know getting closer to you, and you get a call, and the person says, "This is Mary, I'm in front of your gate now." The phone rings again, and it says, "This is Mary, I'm in front of your entryway now." And then again, "This is Mary in your entryway now." And I've never heard how the story ends, so I'm not really sure what it is. But since then, she's never told me about the strange shadowy figure, and she no longer wakes up with scratches or bruises. And now for the second part. 9 years ago, our mom moved away to Washington State. We live in California. And she got a house in a small ferry town across from the Sound of Seattle. And when my mom got the house, she tells me that when she was remodeling the back room, there was a part of the carpet that was a different texture, like someone cut out a square of the carpet and replaced it with another kind. So they removed the carpet, and underneath it was a big stain, like red paint. According to my stepdad, who likes to hunt deer and elk, he knows what dried blood looks like, and that was as if someone had bled out right there. My mom looked up the history of the house and found that the wife of the man, an elderly man who sold us the house, had passed away. And there was no information as to how, but my mom thinks she had slipped and hit her head on something and bled out in the back bedroom of the house. Over the years, when my sister and I would stay in the house during the summer, winter, spring breaks, the doors constantly open and close themselves. Objects are misplaced. The dogs, and occasionally my sister too, stare at random spots in the house. Okay, so there she enters and mentions the dogs again. And one time, I swear to everything holy, this happened. I was carrying 2 packs of toilet paper to put in the master bedroom, but my arms were full and I couldn't open the door. Then the doorknob made the click and opened by itself. I don't know if it was just a draft or what, but my mind didn't know how to react at the moment. So I just said thanks and tossed the toilet paper into the bathroom and went on my way out. The door shut it by itself behind me and hard. I have no idea how to prove that to you, but that was what actually happened. But I'm not here to just tell stories. I want answers. One night, my mom was a bit drunk and was talking things like, "I'm telling you, she's here." And I always ask who, and she never answers anything except something along the lines of, "She's not mean or anything, but she's here." Just my daily dose of what the hell, of course, but every time I visit my mom, I can just feel something strange in the back room. It's not negative or scary, but it's something. Thank you for reading this. And so that is pretty cool. Now, again, that could be, if it is a person that passed away in the house, they may have an ownership of the house. They may feel it's their house, you know, or still their house. And they're just aware. They're aware and they're intelligent, and at least they're participating and they're not being destructive. They're not being a burden or trying to cause problems. They're trying to be helpful. And so that sounds like a good haunting to have if you're going to have a haunting. So I like that one. Very cool. A few months before my father passed away, he told my mother that his own dead mother, had come to visit him. He explained to my mom that she looked so real and that for a few minutes he forgot that she was gone and asked her what she was doing there and how she got there. He said my grandma told him that she was there for him and that everything was going to be okay. He said she told him, "I'm here now. I'll take care of you. Everything's going to be okay." Realization hit him that he was talking to his dead mother, so he closed his eyes took a few deep breaths, and when he opened his eyes again, she was gone. My mom reassured him that everything had been a dream, and my dad had recently had one of his legs amputated, so she chalked this up to him being depressed and imagining things. A few days after, my mom was assisting my dad out of bed because he needed to go to the restroom, and she noticed that the rug next to his bed had gotten tangled up on the wheelchair, so she kicked it out of the way and wheeled my dad out of the room. She said she decided that while my dad was in the restroom, she would come back and straighten up the room and change the sheets and open the curtains and let in some light, etc. So she left my dad in the restroom and grabbed clean sheets and went in the bathroom to clean it up, or in the bedroom to clean it up. And what she saw next made her heart plunge to her stomach. She says that the rug had been straightened out and was neatly laid out next to the bed, and the bed had been made and the curtains had been pulled back, and she completely freaked out and ran from the room. And she asked my dad where she and my dad were only supposed to be the only ones in the house at that time. The next morning, my mom walked into the bedroom to see what dad was up and was ready for breakfast. My dad was just waking up and in that state between sleep and wake when he mumbled, "She didn't mean to scare you. She just wants to help." He didn't remember saying that when asked about it later. Another time, my dad told my mom that his deceased mom and brother had come to visit him and told him not to be afraid, and they were going to be with him when it was time. My dad passed away 2 days later. And those are really cool. I mean, that's the way to go, because if it's going to happen, I mean, having those loved ones close by is, and helping you with that transition has got to be so amazingly important and really cool. I hope when my time comes that the, you know, those people that love me that are on the other side are there to, you know, help me get home. I think that'll be epic. But, you know, not that I'm in any hurry, mind you, but you know what I'm saying. If you got to take that journey, I think it's really cool. And I think that those kind of things maybe happen more than we realize, that, you know, people do see some, oftentimes, you know, someone, loved one, checking up on them. I don't think my dad had any experiences like that. I really wish he would have. And if he did, he didn't talk about it. But my dad was a real stoic man as well. So, I mean, he wouldn't be... when I went home, one of the last times I saw him, he was asking what I was up to. And so I was telling him about the show. And my dad is just not into the paranormal at all. He couldn't have cared less. He would have rather watched a hand towel dry in the sun than listen to what I had to say. But I was explaining to him about the show and some of my experiences, and his eyes just got that glazed over look like, oh God. funny. So, you know, but again, I did have a dream of him after he passed, and it was a really cool dream, and it was very, very real. So I'm pretty sure that he did visit, and I think that's a really healing thing, and very, as Don says, cathartic. I like that word, cathartic. So, I think that if you're going to make that transition, having those loved ones close and letting you know that they're there and they're going to be there and they're going to help you has got to take a lot of the worry out of it. Because, you know, I don't think that I'm afraid to die. I really don't. I don't believe I have been for a very, very, very long time, but what I'm afraid of is what I leave behind. You know, for me, that's my own personal thing. It's like, what am I leaving behind? So if tomorrow my time was up, what would I be leaving for my youngest child and my wife and, you know, my other two children? It's like, so that's one of the things that really keeps me motivated in, you know, helping to develop the portal, because I want to leave them some kind of legacy. I think that'd be cool. But I think that's the fearful part for me is have I done enough during my time to make sure that everyone is okay? But, you know, it's each his own. All right. The next one is... All right. First, some background. I broke up with my boyfriend, later my husband, when I was 5 months pregnant, when my daughter was already 2 months old. I moved from San Diego and rented a two-bedroom apartment across the border in Mexico, to be closer to my parents. I was too afraid to leave my baby in daycare when they offered to help, and since my work was in California, I would just have to cross the border every day to get to work. I would have to get up around 4:30 a.m. and was not back at the apartment until about 8 p.m. By the time I put the baby down, got all my stuff and hers ready for the next day, I'd fall asleep absolutely exhausted. Oh man, she's a trooper. One typical night, I was sound asleep when someone calling my name awakened me. I wasn't sure if I had imagined it, so I stayed really still, waiting to see if I heard it again. And after a few seconds of silence, I decided I'd been dreaming and was starting to fall back to sleep when I heard a female voice urgently calling my name. I was so tired that I couldn't open my eyes, and I'm ashamed to say that my mother instincts were not really kicking in. I was just too tired. Suddenly, I felt someone poke me in the ribs. I mean, this was so painful that I immediately shot up with a big ow. I looked all around the bedroom and there was no one there. I sat there confused for a few minutes when I suddenly felt the urge to go check on the baby. I walked up to her crib and I saw somehow her blanket got wrapped around her head and was covering her face. I pulled the blanket off and saw that her face was purple and sweaty and she was gasping for air. I panicked and ran out of the apartment with her screaming bloody murder. I knocked on my neighbor's door and they came out and took her from me, and at this point she had already began to cry and was breathing again. After making sure she was going to be okay, I found myself back in my apartment, absolutely not able to get back to sleep. And this is when I remembered the poke and the voice calling my name. I got up and checked the mirror, and there was a very faint bruise forming on my side. I was both scared and absolutely grateful. I cried just thinking what would have happened if I had not gotten to my baby when I did. This was my very first experience with this woman entity, but it wasn't my last. A few times after that, when my daughter would cry in the middle of the night as I was getting up from bed to go to her, I would hear a woman's voice in the bedroom go, "Shh, shh," in a very soothing voice. Once, when she was about 6 months old, I made the stupid mistake of sitting her on the breakfast bar and turned to pick up my keys that had fallen. And as I was turning back to get her, I saw that she was falling. And just before she hit the floor, it seemed like she had been lifted and gently placed on the floor by someone I couldn't see. I know some of you are thinking guardian angel, right? That's what I thought until she was about 2 years old, and then her guardian angel turned into our worst nightmare. All the bad things started when my daughter's dad and I decided to give it another try, and he moved in with us. I'll put that in another story. Oh, that's pretty wild, huh? Very, very wild. And you know, the fact that it may not have liked the father might be due to the fact that, you know, maybe the spirits see a lot more. You know, they see the truth of things probably much more clearly than we do, and if that presence knows that that guy's going to be a problem for the mother and maybe even the child, then maybe that's a good thing that it goes sideways. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Thank you. All right, everybody, and we're back, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Buckle up. We're going in. All right, so let's see. This one is, at the time that this story first came in place, I was only a baby, so really this story is from my mother's experience. Whenever I ask my mom if she's had any paranormal experiences, she always brings up this memory. Her first encounter was when my father was at work, and it was just her and me in their bed in the middle of the day. Later in the day, she heard that kitchen cabinets downstairs open and close in a slow pattern. She would listen closely and then say, "Hi, Grandma." She explains that she never felt scared or threatened because she knew it was her. She knew because her grandmother was closest to her and still was after her death. Sometimes she would randomly wake up around 2 or 3 a.m. when she felt a light rub on her chest like her grandmother was waking her up. Unfortunately, yet fortunately, as I got older, my mom had my younger brother. My mom stopped having any activity, which made me feel sad because I've been wanting to come upon a friendly spirit out of my dangerous curiosity. That's a weird thing to say. I tell my parents this all the time, and then they tell me to never mess with spirits because I never know what I'm getting myself into. My mom, who somewhat believes in all these things spiritual, tells me I should only communicate when you need them to leave you alone and to guide them to their own realm where they're supposed to be. They say that you can help to guide them by fixing their regrets, take them to a upbeat and a nostalgic place, and it almost forces them to move on into the spiritual realm. I don't know if that's true or not. I've not heard that before. But that's the whole story. I don't know. Doesn't really have much in that one. You know, that is sweet, though. When, the ancestors... There's a lot of cultures that really revere the ancestral spirits, and I think they're right. I think that they probably are around us and are looking out for us in some manner. I think that that's, you know, those kind of bonds are... They don't rely on, you know, just a physical manifestation, that there's a spiritual bond in families as well. Sometimes not the greatest bonds, but, you know, they're there. Throughout most of my life, I've been constantly moving around to a lot of different places due to my dad's job. We moved into a small, reasonable house somewhere in Colorado, and it was an old house that the people in the surrounding neighborhood said had a history. Apparently, sometime in the 1960s, a friendly man had lived there. He had died of an unfortunate heart attack at some point, and the house had been empty for some time. I was 5 at the time, so this story made a little impression on me. In the house, I vaguely remember always waking up sometime late in the night to the sound of soft footfalls walking around the floor above my head. I slept in the basement, and I'd always assumed that it was my mom or dad, and I would fall back to sleep. One night I was woke up by the sound, but instead of falling back to sleep, I found I was really thirsty, so I walked as quietly as a 5-year-old could up the stairs, dreading mom or dad catching me out of bed. The stairs led straight into the kitchen, and the footsteps I would hear were in the hall that connected to the kitchen. It was in the left wall from the stairs. And I went over to the sink, grabbed some water, and quickly turned to leave. A man in a brown suit was standing behind me. I remember clearly that I wasn't afraid, and I asked him who he was and why was he in the kitchen. The man laughed loudly and got down next to me, smiling like he had heard a funny joke. He patted my head and gave me a knowing wink. "It'll all work out," is the only thing he said, before simply vanishing. The next day I told my parents about it, and they simply smiled and thought I was really witty for making it all up, and somehow I knew I couldn't convince them, so I've stayed quiet about the whole story. We moved out of the house when I was about 7, and never again did I see the man or hear the footsteps. It felt so surreal that sometimes I wonder if it was all just my imagination. His cheerful words that he spoke to me that night don't really make sense to me. What will work out? So, that's my experience. It's a great experience, I guess. As long as you're not afraid, I think that's pretty cool. I think those are good stories, ladies and gentlemen. But I love me a good ghost tale. All right, the next one. In the summer of 2005, my husband and I moved into a house with our then friend, Joe. It was an old, fairly large house that belonged to Joe's family. My husband and I, Brad, were both able to sense ghosts, and most of our experience have been somewhat creepy. Not in this house, though. Brad and I shared the largest bedroom, and at night, I would feel a presence walking through the bedroom. The presence would sometimes stop near the wardrobe and just sort of hang out. Brad worked nights at that time, so I thought maybe I was just imagining things, being alone in bed. After a while, the presence started coming closer to me. And although I never saw her, I got the distinct impression of an old lady. She always projected the sweetest emotion and seemed like she liked being near us. Sometimes it felt as if someone was just lightly patting me on the shoulder in an affectionate way. She would also tuck me in at night. During the winter, I got a nasty sinus infection, and I was lying in bed one morning, wide awake but too miserable to get up, and I could hear the guys playing video games in the living room, so I rolled onto my stomach trying to find a comfortable position, and I was looking to the left and saw the mattress sag near my shoulder, like someone was sitting on the edge of the bed. I decided it was my fever and just watched that dip in the mattress, waiting for it to go away, and it didn't. After a moment, someone started to rub my shoulder as if trying to comfort me. This seemed to go on for several minutes before she finally left. About a month later, Brad got the flu and he had a horrible fever and was really in bad shape, and I spent what time that I wasn't at work fretting over him. And when I went to work, Joe would look in on Brad to make sure he was okay and text me. And we were very worried about him, but Brad spent the better part of a week in bed. Sometime after moving out in June, I asked Brad if he ever met the old lady who stayed in our bedroom. He asked me what I was talking about, and I told him how she would tuck me in and pat my shoulder and how she sat with me while I was sick. He looked absolutely surprised and explained that yes, while he had that flu, someone had been sitting with him, patting him and fussing over him, but he'd assumed that he was either dreaming or hallucinating from the fever. We were sure it hadn't been Joe tucking Brad in and sitting on the bed doing anything other than peeking in the door and saying, "Dude, you okay?" That went against Joe's overdeveloped sense of masculine propriety. We never found out anything about the old lady. All we knew about the house's history that was that Joe's family had bought it and moved it to that location several years before we had moved in. Whoever she was extraordinarily kind, and she seemed to treat Brad and I like her own children. I can honestly say that I miss her. That's an awesome haunting. That's an awesome presence, ladies and gentlemen. Those are the sweet presences. I mean, could you imagine having a doting grandma just hanging out with you all the time? I mean, sometimes you might want a little privacy, but you know what I'm saying. It's just a sweet thing. I like that story. This story is pretty recent. It happened only last month, but this story comes out. It was recorded in 2010, so it's not really that recent. My house only has one floor, and then the basement, which is only half finished. My dad likes to spend most of his time downstairs watching TV, and like most dads, he falls asleep on the couch. One day he was down the stairs while everyone else, me, my mother, and my sister, were upstairs, and like normal, he fell asleep on the couch. He came upstairs and told us that the weirdest thing just happened. About a year ago, if he had told me this story, I would have packed my bags and left this house. He said that he had fallen asleep on the couch, and when he was awoken by someone tapping his foot, like someone gently walking up to him. He expected to see my mom downstairs doing laundry, but she and my sister were in their room watching TV, and I was in my room on the computer. The thing that really makes this freaky is that my dad doesn't believe in the paranormal. He thinks that it's all fake. That's awesome. One night we were talking about it, and I said out loud, because I believe and know that there is something in the house, and I believe that it is my grandparents. But okay, guys, come on. Do something to make him believe. Show him that you are real. Show yourself to him. Touch him or anything, please. And then this happened. So, that's cool. I mean, it's just a touch, but it was enough to make that person go, hey, this doesn't seem right. I think that's a good story. I'm always love it when it happens to the skeptics. I really do, because, you know, it's exciting to me when people come to the realization that maybe there is something to this stuff. I don't think that they need to be true diehard believers. In fact, as we were talking with Lisa Martin the other night, I think a healthy skepticism is good. And I think it's necessary in order to, you know, corroborate your experiences, even if only to yourself. But if you're a skeptical person, you're going to look for the causations. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are way too eager for it to be spirits, spirits, spirits. But it's sometimes not. It's just sometimes quirks of, you know, of mechanical things, like, you know, as Don likes to say, his TV. You know, I honestly think Don probably has a lot more activity than he likes to admit, but he won't believe it until he sees someone floating up, you know, floating above him in bed. So, which may or may not ever happen, who knows? But I hope to drag Don out on some investigations and hopefully give him some real experiences so he won't be able to hide behind that skeptical umbrella of his. And I'm going to hopefully get it on tape. You know, I'm not real big. This is the thing, ladies and gentlemen. One of my pet peeves for paranormal shows is the camera that faces the person. It's like, I don't need to see your scared face. You know, and that bugs the hell out of me. It's like, don't waste my time looking at you as you look at something that I can't see. That to me drives me crazy. And I realize it's, these are the stars of the show, and this is their way to, you know, I don't know, create suspense maybe even, so they can show the scared face and then cut to commercial, and you're like, what the hell is he? I can't wait to get back. But to me, it's just like, it's just a waste of time. Just show me what you're seeing. Point the camera out, even if it doesn't show up on camera, point it out so I can see, you know, and you can explain where whatever happened if it didn't show up on film. It finally spoke. It finally spoke. Cool. But it said year. Y-E-A-R. Huh. It's a good year. Okay. That was cool. It actually surprised me. I was like, God, that thing hasn't spoken in weeks and weeks and weeks. Well, it's a good year. I hope it's a good year for you too. All right, so, but anyway, the whole camera and the face kind of thing is really, really an irritating thing for me. I don't need to see their scared face. I don't need to see, you know, the faces they might make. And quite honestly, most people look really weird in infrared anyway. It makes your hair color different and everything, and people's eyes are glowing. It's just kind of creepy all by itself. But, you know, show me what you're seeing. Show me, you know, if you appear in the frame of somebody holding a camera towards the scene, that's fine, but don't just make it a face cam. I hate face cams. But with Don, I might even be interested in putting in a face cam on him just to capture those reactions. Oh God, you just see his beard just go in shock, you know, like the hair. But he's always got a hat on, so it'd be like his beard would totally wig out. So. All right, so here's the next story. For the record, I am 27 years old and a practicing Wiccan since the age of 13. I have a strong belief in the spirit realm and have both scary and pleasant experiences with them. I'm not judgmental of others' beliefs and believe that everyone has a right to follow their own religious path. I appreciate that. That's a good outlook. Excellent. Back in December of 2009, shortly after Christmas, I lost my familiar. He was a black cat, and he's my best friend. He used to sleep on my lap, and we used to talk to each other. And on December 28th, he got hit by a car in front of my place early in the morning. I was hysterical and screaming and crying, and I think I woke up the whole neighborhood. I finally calmed down, but I still cried off and on all day. Later that night, I was lying down, getting ready to sleep, and I started crying again. I felt an arm wrap around me and a warm feeling, and I felt a lot better. Let me add that my children were already in bed and I was alone in my room. It was not a sexual thing either. It was more of a comforting, loving energy. It was a really nice experience, and I feel that the being helped me with my grief over my cat. So I need to ask, just out of curiosity, do you think that this was just a kind spirit, spirit guide, guardian angel, or all the above? I'm open to all comments. Well, it's whatever it means it to you. I don't know if anybody can answer that question. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break. So don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. All right, everybody, and we're back, at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up. We're going in. The next one, ladies and gentlemen, is from California. The sunny state of California. Yeah, I'm stuck on this weather thing, sorry. All right, so what's going on in California? Well, I'll tell you. Just hang on. I've had a lot of experiences with ghosts in my house, but none of them have been human. In fact, they're all feline, and I enjoy their presence greatly. The particular cat ghost that this story is about is named Flake, originally short for Snowflake, but changed when we realized he was really a pale orange and not white. He lived a normal life for 10 years, and then suddenly, over the space of several months, his entire back end stopped working. It turned out the 10-year-old cat had a tumor on his spine and there was nothing we could do. So we knew where he was the last few nights of his life and could make him comfortable, and he had been staying in one of our bathrooms on this plush rug. And he was a flighty cat as it was. Normally, he didn't usually like to be touched unless it was on his terms, as in he jumped into your lap. Yes, you could pet him, but don't try to chase him down to pick him up. And was afraid of every new thing that came at him. And I was a new thing, and he was afraid of me. We had a nice vet who agreed to do an in-home euthanasia for us, so Flake wouldn't have to endure a car ride to a place that terrified him. And the night before the vet was to come to put him down, I was in the bathroom with him because my adopted sister was in the bathroom we usually use, and I was sitting on the toilet, and suddenly Flake pulled himself over with just his front paws, nuzzled his head against my leg, and I reached down and petted him, then got off the toilet to crouch on the floor and pet him, and he let me. His last day alive, he accepted me into the family, and it made me happy and sad all at the same time. Fast forward to 1 year anniversary of the night before he had to be put to sleep, and that afternoon, as I went into our parents' bathroom, the other bathroom's toilet seat was broken, I saw him incredibly clearly lying on the rug in the bathroom, the same place I saw him a year ago when he was living in the bathroom at the time due to his inability to use his hind legs. I blinked and expected him to go away, but he didn't. I stepped into the room, and I had to go to the bathroom after all, and shut the door behind me, and again he was still there. So I started talking to him, letting him know that it was nice to see him, and asking him why he decided to come and visit. I didn't really get the impression of answers from him, but then again, I didn't really expect any. Squeak is the only ghost cat who's ever given me the impression of any kind of response, and that was just pictures and thoughts along the line of, "Hi, sorry I missed you," or things to that effect. As I sat on the toilet, he stood up and moved towards me. His paws weren't pressing into the plush rug in there, not that I expected him to, and with him being a ghost and all, but that's just the kind of little detail I noticed for no apparent reason. He did exactly what he'd done the night before he died, coming over and gently rubbing his cheek against my leg. I really expected him to disappear now, and I've never interacted with a ghost for this long before. And feeling his fur was the most surreal experience I've ever felt. Even more so than when he brushed against me in the hallway about a month before. I had a sudden fear that he was saying goodbye for some reason, and started trying to convince him not to leave. He's been here for over 10 years, and while his 11th birthday passed without him physically being present for it, I whispered a happy birthday to the winds that night for him. As much as encounters with him and the other ghost cats occasionally flip me out, I also can't imagine the house without them, especially Flake, who I feel really close to, despite having only known him for 3 months when he was alive. I know my sister feels very close to Moe and Squeak, our other two active resident ghost cats, but I like Flaky Cat. I didn't get the impression from his continued nuzzling of my ankle that he was going anywhere, so that allayed my fear a bit, and without thinking, he'd been there and basically solid for a good 10 minutes by then, I pretty much stopped thinking of him as a ghost cat and just gone soft kitty in my head at this point. I reached down and petted his head, and I swear, that cat shed on me. I could feel his plushy fur sticking to my fingers. And I kept petting him, though, and after I finished and moved to clean up, intending to kneel on the floor next to him as I'd done the night before he died, to pet him more thoroughly, and it's hard to reach the floor from the toilet when you're as overweight as I am. But when I looked down, he'd finally disappeared. It was actually a jolt, to be honest, and I'd hoped he'd stick around and I could maybe, odd thought, but I was kind of sleepy, pick him up for the first time. I never actually got to hold him, and only petted him 3 times, and he was flighty and didn't really like to be touched, unless he wanted it, which was why that night meant so much to me. Wow. That's amazing. Huh. I suppose, I mean, if people can manifest so clearly, I don't see any reason why animals couldn't as well. Very curious. Very, very curious. All right, so the next one, ladies and gentlemen, is bringing us back to New York. New York. Yoik. I don't know. New York. Forget about it. All right. I've been wondering lately if most kids who supposedly have imaginary friends are really just talking with ghosts. That happens. Some of them are actually ghosts, I think, but I think that kids also have imaginary friends sometimes, too. It happened with my cousin's daughter last year, and now I'm seeing it with my daughter. A month or so ago, my 2-year-old started saying hi, and then talking gibberish to the ceiling. Every once in a while, when I was putting her to bed, it always started spontaneously, whether we were talking, reading a story, or singing. One night it happened, and then a few hours later I heard her whimper a bit, and then very clearly and loudly, we use a baby monitor, say, "No, no, no." When I went into her room, she was sitting up scowling and talking to somebody. Fast forward on Friday night, she did the same thing, only this time she said, "Hi, Brian. Hi, Brian." It was very clear and audible, and I work with someone named Brian, so I dismissed it to myself and chalked it up to her practicing the name or something. And then the next day, we were out in the backyard, and she was swinging and started saying, "Hi, Brian," again. I still didn't think much. Then last night, putting her to bed, again she says, smiling and looking up at the ceiling, "Hi, Brian. Hi, Brian. Night-night, Brian. Night-night, Gaga." And then it hit me. I don't think it's the Brian I work with that she is talking about. Number one, first let me explain that my niece and nephew always called my grandfather Gaga. He has been dead for several years now, and he died before my daughter was born. And when I show her pictures, I call him Grandpa, because we call my dad, her grandfather, Papa. So there really isn't any confusion, and my niece and nephew are older now. My nephew no longer refers to him as Gaga, but my niece still does because she's autistic, with a speech impairment, and that is easier to say. And they have both insisted that they have seen him since he passed away. At Christmas this year, all of the photographs taken here in the house were filled with white orbs, and the largest ones were clustered mostly around my grandmother, Gaga's widow. Number two, early last week, a close friend and coworker had her 30-year-old son, Brian, commit suicide. Since then, things have been horrible for her, of course, so I've been working a lot and doing everything I can to cover for her at work, as well as talking with her family a lot, making food, buying groceries, putting his obituary in the paper, getting her in touch with another friend whose daughter also committed suicide last year, etc. So when I put number one and number two together, I get goosebumps. I asked my daughter why she told Brian and Gaga Night Night, and she just giggled. The obituary and cards from the funeral home, both with his photographs, have been laying around my house for a few days now. And when the babysitter saw me pick up one of the cards and show it to my daughter this morning and say, "Who is this?" to see if she would say Brian, the babysitter told me, one, she had started saying "Hi, Brian," out of nowhere the other day while outside swinging. Babysitter also assumed she was just practicing the name of the person I work with. And number two, had been carrying around the cards and obit all week saying, "Brian, Brian." This never seems to happen when my husband is around, but he completely believes me. He, however, thinks the Brian part is implausible because his spirit would be too confused to come here to visit after just committing suicide. Keep in mind, I don't know Brian and have only met him once since he lived out of state, but my thought is that if it's him, he might be here because he knows how hard I've been working to help his mom deal with and help his family in any way I can. He was bipolar, from what I have been told, and was very loving, gregarious, yet gentle soul, and he was very much into music, nature, loved his dogs, loved his family, and friends with unparalleled passion. Maybe he wants to thank me. Maybe he wants to let his mom know that he's okay. She doesn't have any other family or close friends who have children as young as my daughter at home, so maybe this was the easiest way to get close to her. Maybe. I don't know. I do think that children see those kind of things so much clearly, though. And I don't know why we lose that, but I think it has something to do with just our lives. Technology, our pace of life, the demands on our attention, the things that draw us out of that centered place that we're so naturally in as little children. I don't know. It's just a theory, but it's as plausible as any, I guess. All right, the next one is coming from Oklahoma. Once my friend and I were hanging out in my room and we started to hear sounds that were really like footsteps and bangs coming from up in the attic. And the next day when my dad was home, I went into the attic to see what it was. There was no one and nothing up there to make those sounds. Another time, my friend was trying to get to sleep, and it was at her house, and I wasn't there, but she began to hear something tapping on the desk about 12 inches from the foot of her bed. She got up to see what it was, and it stopped, and it began again when she laid back down, and so on and so forth. She finally decided to sleep downstairs. Yeah, that's annoying. I mean, you know, if you are a spirit and you're just hanging out, why irritate the hell out of the people that are trying to do their life? It's like, I'm going to sit here and tap till they get up. Oh, they got up. I'm going to quit. Oh, they laid down. Tap, tap, tap. It's just like, my God, just find something productive to do. All right. So my friend's backyard backs up to a large field, and she's told me that she can never go into the backyard at night because she keeps getting the feeling that she's being watched. She can go into the front yard, no problem, but the backyard is just not an option. I'm growing quite tired of saying my friends, so let me give you their names. The friend that I will speak of most is named Saku, S-A-K-U, and the friend that I probably won't talk about as often is named Silence. Saku and I were going on a bike ride around dusk, and This was still during the time of our what? What the hell is sclerophibia? S-C-E-L-E-R-O-P-H-I-B-I-A. I got to Google that word. I don't even know what the hell that means. Sclerophibia? Let's see what it means, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Googling as we speak. It's the fear of bad men. People with this fear tend to worry about any man that might attack or harm them, such as criminals, robbers, rapists, murderers, etc. The origin of this word is scalero, is Latin, meaning wickedness or crime, and phobia is Greek, meaning fear. So it's a fear of criminals, okay? So this was still during the time of our sclerophobia. I assume that's how it's pronounced. I just found out what it meant, much less how it's supposed to sound. So that's the best I can do with that word. Sorry. My neighborhood is connected to another, and we both know of a path that goes through the woods into the other neighborhood and back. And this is where we often go on bikes and walks. And since it was dark, I was very afraid of going into the dark woods for fear of a killer being in there. And I realized that I had to, because that was really the only way back. Even if I turned around, the trail basically goes in a circle. And while I was riding very quickly, I heard footsteps, not from animals, and twigs snapping, branches slapping against others, and things that animals wouldn't cause. Saku and I were at my mom's old house. My mom had gone to the store, and I really don't remember why. And when I was little, I had a life-size Barbie doll that now belongs to my sister, who is 4 years old. And we went into my sister's room, and the doll's head was turned to the left. We went back into the living room, but the next time we went in there, its head was turned to the left. Keep in mind that we are alone. What, did they straighten it out? I don't understand. So it was turned to the left. They went out and came back, and it was still turned to the left. Or did they straighten it out and that wasn't mentioned? I don't know. I don't write them. I just read them, ladies and gentlemen. But the next time we went into their head was turned to the left. Keep in mind that we were alone. We got scared. So we charged from the room. Okay. In about a half an hour, we decided to go back in. The door wouldn't budge, like it was locked. The only problem with that theory is that there was no lock on my sister's door. Finally, we got it open and the doll's head was turned towards us. Something about it made its plastic features look angry. And we didn't go back in there until my mom got home, and when its head was turned to the left the way it was before she went to the store. Okay. I don't know. I've seen video that purports to show these dolls doing things like that. Again, dolls. The original intent of dolls, as I understand it from the ancient times, was to house spirits. And that's another reason why the Amish won't allow faces on their dolls, is because they feel if there's a face, then a spirit can inhabit it. But if it doesn't have a face, it won't be attractive to a spirit to be in it. I don't know. Maybe it's based around a superstition. Maybe it's based around fact. I don't know. Very cool nonetheless. This one's coming from Connecticut as well, ladies and gentlemen. And I feel I should give you the background about my home first. The house is about 117 years old, and I've lived in it for my entire life. I would say the haunting started when I was about 3 years old. I had an irrational fear of being alone upstairs, and sometimes even being upstairs at all. When I was about 5, I remember things started to go missing and then turn up again in peculiar places. One incident, my mother had a jar of money that had vanished, and a day later I found it in my dollhouse. I had no idea how it got in there, and along with other things being misplaced, we heard disembodied voices, people whispering, and my mother on several occasions came to my comfort because she heard a child crying and assumed it was me, when in fact it wasn't. When I finally got my own room, I was moved into what I now call the nightmare room. I called it this because as the night went on and I stayed in this room, I started to develop a severe case of night terrors. Every night I would wake up screaming from graphic, gory dreams. I never was allowed to watch horror movies as a child, so when I described the dreams in such detail to my mom, she was absolutely shocked. Eventually, I was moved from the room, and slowly the night terror stopped, but I kid you not, to this day, I sleep with a blanket over my head. I think the absolute scariest thing, though, was when I was about 8, and there had not been much activity in a while, I was soundly asleep when I felt the sensation of almost like someone gently tapping on my calf to get my attention. Well, it was enough to get my attention. I opened my eyes and I saw a full body apparition of a young man by the end of my bed. I was so shocked, I just screamed at the top of my lungs, and just like that it was gone, never to show itself to me again. As I got older, the activity slowed down, and now at the age of 20, they're almost never active. I don't know if they're just dormant or maybe they only show themselves to children, I guess, honestly, I'll never know. On a side note, in high school, one of my teachers happened to live in my house when she was young, just for a short time, and she confirmed that she too had heard things in that house and had small things go missing. Other than that tidbit, I know nothing about the history of the home, although I would love to someday find out. Yeah, it's hard to know. And again, there doesn't have to be a history. There just has to be presences. And they aren't always tied to the history of the house. They may be tied to the people. They may be tied to an object brought into the house. There's so many variations and possibilities to what creates those havens for spirits. But generally, I really believe that in many cases, it has to do with the sensitivity of a person there, that somebody has latent abilities, and they are drawn to that. I think that that's probably the most powerful beacon. But again, we'll probably never know as well. This one's coming out of California, ladies and gentlemen, and it's pretty short. So this is the last one for tonight. One time when I was still in middle school, I spent the night at one of my friend's house, and her dad suggested we should go up to a place called Gravity Hill. It was only a road. And off the road, there was a slaughterhouse. And after we drove up, the dad put his car in neutral and we faced up the hill. And all of a sudden we started rolling, and I was convinced the dad was joking and moving the car. But when I asked him, he pressed the gas and the engine revved, but we kept rolling. After it ended, the dad drove back to where it started. And before he put the car in neutral, we got out and put baby powder all over the back of the car. And when we got back in, it started rolling. Thankfully, it was really dark, so we never knew when the car was coming. Then after the rolling stop, we pulled over to the side and got out of the car, and we took out flashlights and looked at the back. And what I remember seeing was seriously creepy. There were shapes that looked like handprints over the powder. And we ended up videotaping what we saw and went back home. A few days later, I decided to look up where we went, and the story behind that road was that there had been a school bus crash. Children died, and the rumor was that the rolling was the children pushing the car to keep you from the same fate. Creepy, huh? I think I've heard of maybe not this exact place. I think it was Gravity Hill, though. But there were, you know, plenty of shows that have gone out to look into these phenomena. And what it is it's essentially, usually it's just an optical illusion. It looks like it's a downslope, but it's actually an upslope, and you end up rolling the opposite direction you expect to because of the surroundings. You know, if you put a ball or some kind of level, you'll see that it's, you know, the bubble will show you the incline, even though it doesn't appear to be correct. Your visual faculties tell you one thing, but the reality of the situation is that it's a complete other thing. So while I think those stories are you know, they're neat and all, I don't think there's much to these kind of stories. I think generally they are just a misperception. And And I think that it's important when you're reviewing paranormal activities to try to debunk them. And if they are debunkable, that's okay. It doesn't invalidate the phenomena. It invalidates maybe that specific belief of the phenomena, but you know, there's plenty of other things that can't be validated through science, or can't be debunked through science, I should say. So, you know, people's reluctance to accept those explanations, I think, is because they really want to believe, and that's not bad. I think it's wonderful to believe in things that you find magical and make the world interesting, but there's enough things in the world that are plenty interesting and beyond words, crazy stuff that goes on. But the mundane things that can be explained away, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. It's like, yeah, you know, people see a lot of times what they want to see. And I think it's important to remain as objective as you can, especially if you want to impress upon others you know, these beliefs. If you want people to believe that there's more to the world, then, you know, you can't throw out flimsy possibilities, because a lot of people require pretty concrete proof of some kind, or the lack of being able to provide concrete proof, even subjected to rigorous study. Now, again, the paranormal doesn't lend itself to rigorous study normally, so it's no wonder that many of these things remain unexplained, not because I think people can explain them away, but because, you know, they just happen when they happen. And it may be any one of a million reasons why they happen, but, you know, we don't often know what those triggers are. So, just my two cents on that. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.